Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast joins you once again, where the Milwaukee Bucks are the top team in the NBA. They, of course, beat the Los Angeles Lakers on Thursday night at Pfizer Forum in one of the bigger regular season games we've seen in a while. They then go to New York, beat the Knicks, come back home for a back-to-back, beat the Pacers convincingly with a second-half surge, and the Bucks are—they do indeed have the best record, still only four losses. And we're here to talk about it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. And on the other line is Matt Velasquez. He is the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, spending his holidays traveling with this Bucks team, including a big Christmas showdown coming up against Philadelphia. After we chat with Matt, we have an interview. I got a one-on-one with Mr. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Had a chance to chat with him for a few minutes, asked him a few questions about the upcoming game in Paris, when he'll be returning to Europe to play the first regular season game in France. Asked him about those WWE celebrations, a little bit of LeBron in there, just the nature of having fun in pro basketball when the expectations are as high as they are. Enjoyed my chance to kind of a surprise for me that I got a chance to sit down with him for a brief amount of time. And so that is something you can look forward to at the end of this conversation. Matt, how are you doing? This team just keeps churning out wins for you. Some pretty exciting stuff from the Milwaukee Bucks, as always.
Yeah, no, things are running pretty smoothly, I would say. And I think it's been pretty entertaining to watch overall. I think that Lakers game, I mean, you were there. You know how you know, exciting that crowd was, and the atmosphere, and just how, you know, just high level that was. And so I'm sure we'll talk about that much more. And it'll be, I think, even more fun to go out to Philly on Christmas, where, you know, we have the two teams that are expected to be, you know, atop the Eastern Conference by season's end. You know, obviously the Philly crowd, which is a very excitable one. I think we'll go with that. And, you know, the Christmas Day showcase of the NBA. So, you know, we're just awash with, you know, high level games, you know, big time opponents, and great storylines for the Bucks. What could be better?
The Bucks are 27-4. They already have more wins, as I pointed out on Twitter, than the 07-08 team. They've passed several Bucks teams in history, but 07-08, that was Yi Jianlian's rookie year, among other storylines going on that season. Michael Redd was part of that team. I am going to keep track, I think, on Twitter. Every time they pass another Bucks team in total wins, we'll give a little eulogy to that team as the Bucks fly past it. Still thinking maybe they could even set that franchise record, or at the very least pass what they did last year when they registered 60 wins and, of course, went to the Eastern Conference Finals. We will talk about that Philly game, of course, but let's start looking backward at this Los Angeles Lakers game. It was a happening at Pfizer Forum. I actually thought the fan interest was a little bit bland in the beginning, and as the game got going, as Giannis hit 5 3-point field goals, of course the place kind of started to blow up with each one of those. Big performance from Giannis, big performance from Wesley Matthews guarding LeBron James and keeping him in check. And the Bucks, they built a big lead. They had to hold on at the end, but they did come away victorious. That game, it's a little tricky to evaluate. Every player wants to tell you that the game is just 1 of 82, that it doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. We know that it probably has more juice than just the average bounce-back game coming off of a loss. But the Lakers were, like we'd mentioned on the last podcast, that was 8 of 9 on the road. They had been on a grueling road schedule. They did look tired. LeBron was, I believe, out for the Lakers' next game. Anthony Davis was playing on a bum ankle. You wouldn't know it by the way he played. He played every minute in the second half and was awesome. But it does stand to, you know, Colin Cowherd said this and got Bucks fans irritated, saying that it really wasn't a true indicator of what this matchup would look like in the finals because the Lakers were so worn down. And, you know, the Bucks had the advantage in that regard. I don't know how to evaluate it. Obviously, you want to be really excited. It's a huge win over the other best team in the NBA, but it is just a stepping stone in December on the way to bigger things for presumably both teams. How do you look at it? Do you completely dismiss the players when they say it's just another game, no big deal? Or do you think that there is some, you know, some reality to that?
They're allowed to say that it's just another game and it's no big deal, and I'm allowed to say that it's not just another game and that it is a big deal, and that it definitely, you know, it means something. At the very least, it means something, you know, for the league and for, you know, for the TV ratings and all that, because that was the most watched TNT game since the, you know, opening night when the Lakers played the Clippers. I mean, this is, you know, this is something that other teams, that fans, that the whole league, everybody's watching. Like, this is, you know, the pinnacle of, you know, regular season matchups, or at least close to it. I mean, you look at those two teams going in there with matching, you know, what was it, 24-4 records. That had never happened in the NBA, where at that point in the season, teams faced each other with fewer than five losses. You know, and for the Bucks to be able to, against a team that has LeBron James and Anthony Davis, you know, both healthy enough to play, which means that no matter what's going on, they are like two of the top five players right now. Basically any capacity, even 80% of like Anthony Davis, you know, with that ankle, is still so much better than like most other players. I mean, this is a really good team with like, you know, two high end players that teams have not been able to figure out this season. And for the Bucks as a team to be able to figure out how to slow down LeBron and how to slow down Anthony Davis, at least for a half, before he got going with 28 of his 36 in the second half, I think that makes us a little bit of a statement, you know, that the Bucks defense is able to kind of tamp down on those two stars. I mean, the Lakers bench had 4 points. Like, they had more. I think Rajon Rondo had more turnovers off the bench than the Lakers had points. Like, that, you know, that amounts to something. That means there could be a problem in the future for the Lakers, that maybe their depth of talent isn't good enough. You know, you could read into it that way. You could also read into it as, okay, it was just one game, it's the end of a long road stretch for them, they're gonna be better. You know, but at least it raises some alarms. I think on the Bucks side, I think, you know, that game was a obviously a showcase for Giannis. The three pointers, that's really the take home message there, that, you know, he wasn't just shooting his usual like one dribble pull ups. He was shooting catch and shoots. He was shooting, you know, he had that one late in the shot clock where he was like, he had his back to the basket, had to dribble and turn, step back and make the three. He's doing all kinds of different stuff, and he's feeling incredibly confident. But you also mentioned like Wesley Matthews. I don't know if going into that matchup that I would have expected Wesley Matthews to, one, guard LeBron for as long as he did. He guarded LeBron more than anyone in that game guarded anyone else. And also the general success he had. You know, I think LeBron was like 3 of 8 or 3 of 9 from the floor. I think for 8 points when guarded by Matthews. You know, he really showed up in a game that the Bucks needed him to. They've been talking about his defense ever since they signed him this summer. And for him to you know, really answer the call in a game like that one, it says a lot. And so, you know, those guys got the spotlight, but there were plenty of other strong performances up and down the Bucks roster. They didn't have Eric Bledsoe. I think this game, you know, while we already knew the Bucks were really good, really deep, Giannis is fantastic, all that stuff, this game just further, you know, demonstrated the wealth of talent and the chemistry and the way that they work together and how they can really get it done on both ends. I think this was, you know, a super impressive win, especially, you know, when you consider that, yes, I watch the Bucks all the time, but there are a lot of people watching the Bucks during that game that don't watch them all the time, and I think they'll come away, you know, being very impressed.
Yeah, I think that was definitely clear as Giannis is hitting these three-pointers and everyone kind of on Twitter nationally is freaking out because they hadn't seen that from Giannis before. But I thought the big takeaway is Wesley Matthews and George Hill. I mean, guy coming off the bench, and we've talked about him at points this season. But George Hill is having a sensational year, and he's throwing down dunks now. He really seems to... I mean, really, it sounds cliche, but is sort of the captain of that second unit. He is a veteran presence on the floor who's also capable of doing just about anything right now, inside and outside, and on defense. So George Hill at this point, to me, is a bona fide sixth man of the year candidate. And I mean, we played around with that concept last year with Pat Connaughton when Pat had some early season success, and then of course he wasn't really in the conversation by the end of the year, but. What George Hill is doing, I mean, this is why the Bucks team why everyone's still scratching their heads how this Bucks team can be so good without a true number two superstar, so to speak. You know, I think Chris Middleton is plenty good enough, but you still have people like Colin Cowherd or any other national voice saying the Bucks just don't have a second or third guy that you'd really want to turn to. But the unit is so good. Guys like George Hill are so good coming off the bench. Do you think George Hill at this point is a bona fide sixth man of the year candidate? I know Lou Williams, it's the honorary Lou Williams award, so who knows there, but where do you think he falls if the season ends today?
No, I think he has to be in the conversation. I mean, he went 3 of 6 on threes on Sunday against the Pacers, and his season average went down. Like, that's
incredible.
That's incredible. Yeah, exactly. And he's at 51.6% on threes this season. That's the best in the NBA. And it's not like he's not taking any. You know, he's 47 of 91. He's getting up shots. He may only be playing, 21 and a half minutes a game, but he's shooting, 3.1 threes per game. I mean, that's just mesmerizing. And the fact that he's not just doing that either. Like, it's not like he's just, some guy who comes off the bench and his only job is to just like spot up and shoot threes. He's asked to run that bench mob, and he's the guy who needs to set the tone at the front of the defense. Guard ones, guard twos. Whenever if they do switch, he's going down there into the post sometimes, trying to front much bigger players and deny the ball, doing hard work down there on offense. He's moving the ball around. He's averaging 3 assists a game. He's getting rebounds, something that we saw a lot against the Pacers on Sunday. I think he had like 6 or 7 rebounds by halftime. But he's also, driving the lane. He's creating for others. He's creating for himself. He's been, clutch at the free throw line. Like, just basically you name it, George Hill is doing it. And if that's not a sixth man of the year candidate, I don't know what is. He's been just super impressive. And, Bud was asked after the Pacers game on Sunday if he's ever seen, George play at this level. And Bud was an assistant back when George was drafted by the San Antonio Spurs. And he's like, no, I wish I could have seen him play this well at other times. But, he's definitely playing better than he ever has. He's really taken to his role within the team and just absolutely flourished. I mean, maybe at some point the threes stop falling for a little while and he goes into some kind of slump. But right now it's just hard to envision it because every time he shoots just looks so smooth and consistent and like effortless. And he's making them from all over the court. Even if a slump does come, I can't imagine it would last long.
Hill was a big reason why, even with when the Bucks were in foul trouble in that game against the Lakers, both Chris Middleton and Giannis early in the third quarter had 4 fouls and sat for really 7.5 minutes in the third quarter, where the Lakers were able to make a run and get back into the game. But he's a big reason why the Bucks were able to maintain a sizable enough lead to hold on in the end. And again, that win over the Lakers, yet another, like you said, yet another indicator of just how good this Bucks team can be. They then hit the road and went to New York to face the Knicks, not a challenge at the same level, and Milwaukee was able to prevail pretty easily there before coming back home to beat Malcolm Brogdon and the Indiana Pacers. One of the guys who really looked good in those two games is Brook Lopez. He was really hitting from outside. We have not seen that this year. We sort of expressed on the last podcast that this was getting into concerning territory with him, that we might not see the Brook Lopez we saw last year. But, in the Lakers game, they really started running the offense through the post through Lopez. I mean, we've mentioned this before, his flexibility, his ability to impact things defensively in the paint. Like, he's not just a shooter, obviously. And so he was able to maintain a high level of relevance there. And now you're starting to see him hit shots again. I guess that's one more weapon for the Bucks to sort of reclaim there. You saw him in these two games. Are we seeing Brook Lopez kind of finding whatever it was he lost based on what we saw against New York and Indiana?
Yeah. I mean, it always helps when you make half your threes. He's 7 of 14 over the past two games. Before that, against the Lakers and Mavs, he was 0 for 7. So he's just a hair over 30% from long range this season, a number that we would expect would go up. I mean, he's been like a 34% or higher 3-point shooter on high volume over the past three seasons. And so, you know, getting those threes to fall, I think is, you know, obviously a big thing for the Bucks. He had 2 30-footers in the fourth quarter of the win over the Pacers on Sunday. But I think the Bucks kind of look at that as like gravy, because everything else that Brook Lopez is doing for them has been so important. I mean, you mentioned the Knicks game. He had 7 block shots, 7 rebounds. Against the Lakers, he had 3 blocks and 4 steals. He has been, you know, really great at the center of their defense, and anchoring their scheme. He's a huge reason why the Bucks, if they're not the best, they're near the best in terms of field goal percentage against in the restricted area. They don't let teams score really close to the basket like that. I mean, I think they're somewhere near 40%. For the season, which is just incredible. When you get inside against the Bucks, you are going to be swarmed. You're going to have to deal with Giannis. You're going to have to deal with Brook Lopez. And the Bucks really do well at not fouling in those situations too. So it's just really difficult for opposing teams. And Brook has a lot to do with that. And so, you know, all the different things he adds, if he can now start adding 3-pointers to that, that then the Bucks just get even more dangerous, even more difficult to guard. It's pretty crazy. I mean, those 7 blocks against the Knicks were just so impressive. Every time guys thought that they could get inside and challenge Brook, who contests more shots in the NBA or than anybody in the NBA by a significant margin. I think it's like by like 3 shots a game or something like that. He was everywhere. The Knicks didn't think he was going to be. You know, using those long arms to you know, block shots left and right. So if the three ball starts getting going for him, he could be on the way to a really great season of his own.
Malcolm Brogdon, of course, was back on Sunday and maybe lightly sort of restirring the pot a little bit when he said that if the Bucks had wanted him, he would have loved to have come back. Of course, we've gone over that scenario many times. The Bucks electing to sign and trade him to the Pacers, where he has flourished in more in a probably broader offensive role. Not probably. He's a more focal point of their offense than he would have been in Milwaukee. So his numbers are great, and he's having a good season, and the Pacers are a good team. And of course, the Bucks can't feel too badly about where things have gone with their 27-4 record. It's hard to imagine this team truly misfiring when you see them get out to a start like this in the 19-20 season. But I mean, you were right there. You were talking to him and heard him say those words. Is there anything you can perceive from the Bucks to suggest that they're missing something that they would have otherwise had if they had found a way to keep Malcolm Brogdon? Bearing in mind that there'd be players not on this roster that are, because if they had brought Brogdon back, if they had found a way to make the financial gymnastics work, do you think that the Bucks are still at this point lacking something that Brogdon could have brought to the table, or that they have fully covered that and it would have been a win-win? It would have been a win-win for both sides. Brogdon flourishing, the Bucks are great, and really, we really just need to let it go.
Yeah, I think we're definitely at the let it go portion of the season. Maybe it'll get picked back up, come playoff time if any of the Brogdon replacements, obviously Hill, Wesley Matthews, Dante DiVincenzo, Sterling Brown, Kyle Korver, like if those guys aren't doing enough, then I'm sure this topic will get resurrected. But right now, I mean, I don't think fans could be happier with what Dante DiVincenzo has brought as a guy off the bench and also a spot starter for Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe when they've dealt with injuries. I think people obviously can't be much happier with what George Hill has brought. We just spent plenty of time talking about him, and he's been incredible. I think coming off of the last few games and the way that he's really gotten rolling, Wesley Matthews has been everything that the Bucks hoped he would be in terms of like a 3-and-D guy who stepped into that starting lineup in Malcolm's spot and is doing really well. Sterling Brown has had games where he's played well. Pat Connaughton has games where he's played well. Kyle Korver, obviously, it's Kyle Korver. He's doing what he was brought in to do. So I think that right now the depth of the Bucks has made it so that, you know, you can kind of forget about Malcolm Brogdon sometimes because they have guys who are doing some of the same things and some different things than Malcolm Brogdon, and they're all doing it for a much lower cost than what Malcolm commanded. And I think that's important to note. You know, when he said, like, you know, I would have loved to stay if the Bucks had valued me in the way that the Pacers value me, I think that comes down to dollars and cents. I think the word value is kind of the operative word there. And he's talking about that the Pacers were willing to pay him more than the Bucks were. And you have to imagine, you know, the Bucks knew that they had Malcolm as a restricted free agent last year, that they could match any offer. And they had kind of the first opportunity to negotiate or, you know, kind of at least know where they stood, you know, relative to Malcolm and kind of, you know, have an understanding of where the market might be on their end. And I think it was probably made clear that the Bucks weren't going to offer him as much money as another team was going to. And I think, you know, because he said during the conversation he had with the media before the game yesterday that he knew probably a few weeks before free agency started that he wasn't going to be back in Milwaukee. And I think that, you know, that probably means that he, you know, was of the understanding that there would be more money available elsewhere. And when you're somebody, and we've talked about this plenty of times before, but when you're somebody who is, you know, hitting free agency for the first time, you have spent 3 years in the league, you were the rookie of the year, and you're coming off a historic 50-40-90 season that's basically only been done by Hall of Famers, you deserve to get paid. And you should get paid as much as you possibly can, because especially when you're Malcolm Brogdon and you're, you know, you came out of college after 4 years and you have, you know, maybe a few more miles on the tires and you're a little bit older than most guys who are going to their fourth year in the league. You don't know how many times you're gonna get an opportunity to get that big payday in free agency. And so, you know, you should definitely get paid. And 4 years, you know, $85 million is a pretty great deal. I think we can all agree on that.
That'll work for me. That works for me.
Yeah, and that's hard money for the Bucks to shell out, considering that it would put them into the luxury tax and it might mean that they wouldn't bring some guys back from last year's team, and that it would trigger the beginning of going into the potential repeater penalty for the luxury tax and all that stuff. I think part of it too is that the Pacers valued Malcolm, along with monetarily, they valued him as a core piece and a leader of their team. I mean, Nate McMillan was saying yesterday how, you know, now he and Victor Oladipo are together in that same backcourt. And basically, like, contract-wise and age-wise, they're on the same timeline together. So they can be that backcourt of the present, of the future, and lead that Pacers team, you know, for a while. And you know, Malcolm, with Oladipo out, you know, he has immediately assumed that leadership role of the Pacers. He's been allowed to run the offense. You know, he has a much higher usage rate. His scoring is up. His assists are way up. You know, he is playing point guard, a role that he wanted to play, and being a leader, another role that he wanted to play in the NBA. Something that just isn't going to happen with the Bucks. Like, even Eric Bledsoe, as the, you know, de facto point guard of the Bucks, he doesn't have the ball in his hands as much as Giannis does. Like, no matter who is on the team with Giannis, probably for the next decade, who knows? Giannis is going to have a higher usage rate because he's Giannis. Like, he can do things that basically no one else can do. And so you want the ball in his hands most. And that's just not going to happen if you're Malcolm Brogdon. So I think for Malcolm, he got paid, well-deserved, and he now is able to be in a position where he is a leader of a team, a face of a team. And he did say yesterday that, you know, that's something that every player wants to do, that you aspire to be the guy on a team and to be able to prove yourself as a leader and to kind of have your own team. And so I think, you know, as of right now, the Bucks obviously have the best record in the league. The Pacers have been, you know, super feisty and have, you know, very squarely put themselves among the contenders in the East. A lot of that is because of Malcolm Brogdon. And I think it's working out for both sides.
Brogdon and the Indiana Pacers had their own moment against the Lakers just a couple nights before they came to Pfizer Forum when they were able to upset the Lakers in Indianapolis. So, yes, it's been a good year for him. The big possible knock on him would be injury history. And I often roll my eyes when I hear about, you know, injury, guys who are, you know, like more likely than others to get hurt, you know, injury prone. And I still think that's a little bit random and a little bit of luck, but we don't know. Maybe at the end of the year, Brogdon will be unable to go the full schedule. He's already missed a little time this year with an injury, but I think it's just one of those win-win situations. And at some point you just got to come to terms with it, that it was good for both sides. It's going to be fine for both teams.
And we haven't even mentioned that the Bucks didn't just lose him, right? Like, they got three picks. They got a first round pick and two second round picks. So it wasn't like, oh yeah, see you later, Malcolm. Like, we get, you know, this, you know, we get nothing for you. It was, hey, let's leverage our situation to get some picks, and we'll, you know, add to our assets for a potential trade or to just use those draft picks. I think that, you know, the Bucks got, you know, the other guys back that they wanted. They stayed under the luxury tax, which, you know, we can still debate that another time, but right now it's still looking okay. They can still go over it if they wanted to make a trade later this season and take back more salary and go over the tax. I mean, that could definitely happen. And they have picks. So all's well for both teams. As we said, I think so far it's a win-win.
And no way George Hill's on this team. I mean, you mentioned that already. It's not just one player that's taking Malcolm Brogdon's spot on the roster as it stands. You know, there's probably no Kyle Korver. So we don't know if those guys ultimately will be huge contributors in the playoffs, but you would certainly think so. And, you know, like you said, if it's not just one for one substitution with the draft picks as well, there's a lot to like about Milwaukee's side of this whole exchange.
Right. And, you know, like Wes Matthews, like, they could have still signed him even if they brought Malcolm back, because they signed Wesley to a veteran minimum. And even if you're over the tax, you can bring in guys on minimum contracts. But does Wesley Matthews want to come to Milwaukee if there's not as much of a role for him? Like, if Malcolm is starting and they bring back their whole starting unit, all of those guys are going to get big minutes, and Wesley might say, hey, you know, I'd like to go somewhere where I can play and have more of a role. And so maybe he doesn't come, and like maybe they don't have as much, you know, depth and strength of depth on their roster. So, you know, there's so many questions and spinoffs of the Brogdon decision. But, you know, as we keep coming back to, as of right now, everything's looking okay.
Last thing before I get to my interview with Giannis here, the Christmas preview is something that we're looking for. The kind of talked about what you were looking forward to the Lakers game, the last podcast before that game was set to be held. Same thing here with the Sixers game on Christmas. Now, Philadelphia is, I believe, the 5 or the 6 seed as it stands today, 21-10 in the East, which is obviously a fine record, and they probably will still be a top 4 team, top 3 team when it's all said and done. Obviously, a lot of preseason prognostications see the Sixers and the Bucks as the teams that will square off in the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not sure anyone thought the Celtics would be quite this good, so maybe the calculus has changed a little bit, but this is a matchup we would have circled at the beginning of the year. The first time the two teams have met, the Sixers, of course, have Joel Embiid, as physically imposing as a player as there is in the NBA and in the Eastern Conference, and as talented as a guy that we have. What are the things you're looking for in this matchup? The things that you're going to kind of see as indicators that if these teams meet in a 7-game playoff series, that the Bucks could potentially have the upper hand.
You know, I think that, you know, first of all, I'm super excited about this Christmas Day matchup. We haven't gotten to see these two teams against each other this year. And last year, when we did see them, you know, against each other, we had that St. Patrick's Day game in Milwaukee that the Sixers won, but was just an absolute slugfest. And Giannis went off, and he called Ben Simmons a baby, and it was just fun. And then the next game, you know, in Philly, we had Eric Bledsoe 3 minutes of the game, you know, throwing the ball in Embiid, the most violent act the one of the Philly radio people has seen in years.
Yes, definitely made my quotes of the year list.
Yes, and it was just wonderful. And then Giannis was blocking Embiid at the rim. I think he blocked him to the floor at one point. Had the late block, you know, that he, you know, chucked out of bounds basically, and the Bucks won that game. So I feel like no matter what happens when these two teams play, like, there are fireworks. It is fun. I think they are incredibly competitive, and they go hard against each other. I'm really interested to see, you know, how the Sixers and their height and their length matches up with the Bucks. Their defense has the potential to be really good. They have a bunch of just long, athletic, switchable, smart defensive players. And that could definitely give the Bucks some trouble. The big question, though, is how do the Sixers score against the Bucks? They don't have a glut of shooters. I think they've been shooting better over the past few weeks after a slow start, but they still don't have a ton of outside options. Joel Embiid, obviously you want to get him outside. You want him to shoot more from deep because you don't want to deal with him inside. I'm looking forward to seeing how Brooke Lopez and Robin Lopez and to some extent Giannis deal with Embiid, because I feel like that's part of the reason why Robin was brought in here, was to be able to potentially in a playoff series, you know, be able to throw a big physical 7-footer at Joel Embiid at all times, whether it's Brooke or whether it's Robin. And so, you know, this should be just a fun matchup. I know that Eric Bledsoe probably won't be there because of the avulsion fracture in his right shin. You know, we'll mostly be seeing these teams at full strength. And it'll be a good glimpse, kind of like the Lakers game. It'll be a good glimpse at, you know, where each team stands and how things could look potentially down the road. Even though, like you know, there's always the caveat that these teams could change. There could be trades. There could be, you know, there could be injuries. There could be guys getting healthy from injury. A lot of differences, and it's only the first meeting. But, you know, it'll still be fun. And I think it'll also be a good test for the Bucks. They've been really good on the road this year. The Sixers have been really good at home this year. I think the Sixers, you know, they're 15-2 at home. Same home record as the Bucks. But the difference is that the Sixers have been pretty awful on the road, 6-8, while the Bucks have been 12-2 on the road. So can the Bucks' general success on the road, you know, can they bring that to Philly on Christmas? We'll see.
He is Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're going to be bidding adieu to him and diving into this interview with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Chatted with him again before the Lakers game, so we did ask a question about LeBron. Even though we knew would know the outcome, as we do by the time somebody listened to it, but just talking about, you know, him watching LeBron, what awes him still about LeBron's game. Also asked him about the WWE pregame ceremonies that have gone viral, the fake wrestling routines that they have scripted out. Members of the Bucks have scripted out before the game. Robin Lopez, Wesley Matthews in on that as well with Giannis, and a couple other questions. Looking forward to that game in Paris later in January, where Giannis will be headed back to Europe to play a game, the first game that NBA game, regular season NBA game in France. So that'll be something to look forward to as well. Matt, I'm gonna send you away, but thanks for checking in with us. We will catch you again very soon.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas to you and to all our listeners. Happy holidays. And I forgot to mention to you, I don't know if you saw this, but after the game on Sunday night, Giannis and Wes were gifted WWE style championship belts by a member of the Bucks.
I did not see that. Who came up with that?
So that the credit goes to Nick Monroe. He's one of the Bucks Digital, probably like the head of Bucks Digital. But I think I think he's had him for a little while. He's just waiting for the right time, and, you know, the last home game before Christmas was a good time to do that. So it's something that I think there's a picture floating around, on Twitter. I'm sure, you know, the Bucks put one out. But now they have tag team title belts to go with their routine. So I assume some props will show up in the near future.
He Giannis is definitely a guy who has a lot of fun. Obviously, other teammates on this team do as well, and it's cool that's still a thing with the Bucks. You know, at a level where the expectations are so high. I actually asked Giannis about that too. How do do you have to actually try to do that? Do you have to schedule time to have fun and just force yourself to kind of not think about basketball for a little while, but I think you'll like his response. He's just a fun, genuine guy, and it's working out. Bucks fans are enjoying watching him both on and off the court. So thanks again, Matt. We will chat with you again very soon. Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you.
What's it going to mean to be? What are some of the things you're going to want to do when you get to France? But also, what does it mean to just be able to play, you know, a game in Europe?
It's going to mean a lot, first of all, for the game. For how international the game has been, how many fans we have all over the world. It's big, and playing, I think, this first game in France ever.
I think they had one recently, but I don't know. I shouldn't answer. I don't know.
Yeah. Might be the first one, might be the second one, I don't know, but it's big, just going out there and, the fans being able to watch an NBA game and see go through this whole experience and of an NBA game is going to be big, and for me, I'm just going to go out there, try to get the job done,
yeah.
And get Charlotte. I don't think I'm going to do much.
You're not
going to
see Notre Dame or Pointe Neuf or any of that stuff?
Nah,
you're going to see a basketball court?
Yeah, I'm just going to see basketball court, going to practice,
sure.
Try some food maybe. I've been to France before.
All right. This prison or correctional facility you guys were visiting on Tuesday, what were some of the conversations you had? What were some of the things that really stick with you from that experience?
We have a great conversation, and a lot of people share their stories, but just like you never have the answer for everything.
Right.
But all you can do is understand them, sympathize with them. And one thing that, I think stuck with me was that, the pain that I felt, when they were, telling me the stories. And all of them had, a great ambition, to be better, to do better. It was like, okay, I messed up in the past, but I want to do better. I want to better myself. I want to do this for my family.
Yeah.
And it was good.
Take me behind the scenes of these WWE things that you guys do. Who is in charge of the choreography? How much does that take?
I'm not in charge. I won't take credit. I do not want to take credit for that. Wesley Matthews got to take credit for that.
So he's assigning roles and he's doing the choreography?
One. I'm just like the guest. it's Wesley Matthews with Robin Lopez, the guys that, did this, started this. And I just joined in because I thought it was so fun, and I used to be a WWE fan growing up, so I just jumped in, made some moves, and we went viral.
Is it difficult to find time to have fun because there's so much emphasis on everything, game to game, practice to practice, day to day? Do you have to make a conscious effort to do that, or does it still just come natural?
No, I always have fun.
Yeah.
I always have fun. There's a lot of times that I'm serious and, Latin, but we're going to walk away from this game and eventually one day, but gotta make, if you're in this game for 20 years, you cannot not have fun for 20 years. You gotta have fun, enjoy time with your family, enjoy, times with things that you like to do. And when it's go time, you're lucky.
Sure. All right, last one. You're gonna get to see LeBron James. When you see him play, what do you think? I mean, you should, I imagine, see yourself at his level, but what are the things he does that still sort of take your breath away?
I'm not at his level, man.
No.
I'm not at his level. I'm not even close.
Yeah.
LeBron James is, bro, he's arguably one of the best players of all time.
Oh, sure.
So, if not the best, second best. So, I'm not, definitely not at his level, but he's obviously a role model that I, look up to. But, tomorrow it's a game. It's a game that we're going to win, and as much as we all respect him and we respect what he's done for the game, we got to can't show him respect on the court and try to win the game.
All right.
That's all we got on today's episode of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. Obviously, find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating and review. We really appreciate that. Hopefully over the holiday, you got a little extra time. You can maybe check us out through iTunes or whatever we're calling that now, Apple Podcasts, and let us know what you think. That stuff helps us big time to reach more people. You can obviously find me on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe. That's JRRADCLIFFE. F-E. Matt is at Matt_Velazquez, V-E-L-A-Z-Q-U-E-Z. You can chat with us through those, through Twitter as well. And we will probably be back with you again, maybe not next week with the holiday season, but definitely the week after that, if not beforehand. So best way to keep up to date is obviously to, you know, subscribe to us through your Apple Podcasts app on your phone, and the newest episode will arrive to you as soon as it posts. Thanks again for chatting with us, or listening to us chat anyway, and we will talk to you again real soon.